Sevgili ürün yöneticileri, yeni bölüme geçmeden önce çok kısa bir duyurumuz olacak. Üretim bandı ve Migros işbirliğindeki ürün yönetimi 2022 raporu çalışmaları başladı. Bu rapor için sizden bir ricamız olacak. 7-8 dakikanızı alacak bir anketimiz var. Bu anketi doldurmanızı ve etrafınızdaki bütün ürün yöneticileri arkadaşlarınıza paylaşmanızı istiyoruz. Ankete üretimbanda.com/anket linkinden ya da bölüm notlarındaki linkten ulaşabilirsiniz. Katılımınız rapor için çok çok kritik. Mümkün olduğu kadar fazla ürün yöneticisine de ulaştırabilirseniz çok seviniriz. İyi dinlemeler. Welcome to a new episode of Üretim Bandı. Selam Üretim Bandı dinleyicisi. Üretim Bandı aslında bir podcast'ten daha fazlası. Biz aktif bir topluluğuz. Ürün geliştirme ve şirket yönetimiyle alakalı konularda kendi aramızda konuştuğumuz ve yeni şeyler öğrendiğimiz aktif bir Slack platformumuz var. Katılmak istersen üretimbandı.com/slack linkine giderek topluluğumuza giriş yapabilir, sadece topluluğa özel oluşturduğumuz içerik ve etkinliklerden faydalanabilirsin. Unutmadan, topluluk üyeleriyle paylaştığımız, 2 haftada bir yayınladığımız bültenimize de bekleriz. üretimbandı.com/bülten linkinden bültene kaydolabilirsin. Keyifli öğrenmeler. Welcome to the podcast. My guest today is Paul Orchanyan, the CEO and founder of Bain Public. Welcome, Paul.
Hi, nice to have you join me on your podcast.
Great to have you. So you're in Montreal, Canada right now. I'm in Istanbul, Turkey. We're far away, but we're having this conversation thanks to the beauty of technology. Before we get into your methodology, I wanted to give you the floor on explaining what you guys do in Bain Public. So yeah, what is it that you do?
It's funny, Bain Public started out as a consultancy on product management, but we quickly became a skills enablement company. We work with startups, scale-ups, as well as SMB, mid to large scale organizations on implementing product management into a leadership team. We quickly realized it's not about training product managers. It's really about making sure that the leadership team is empowering the function of product management, understands what they do, understands what to expect from them, understand how to work with a roadmap. And those things aren't really implemented in most companies. So Bain Public is a company that helps implement those processes by working with leadership as well as with the product managers, sometimes even helping hire the product manager. But we do this through this process we call SOAP. It's our methodology, which is a 12-week process that really helps gather the entire collectivity of leadership and product teams together in order to, you know, work towards a roadmap.
So that's what I want to go next, because that was what got my attention in terms of Bain Public, and then we have a conversation afterwards. The thing that interested me was that you guys basically standardized the product management discipline into week or 12-step program, let's say. Or I don't know if it's a program, but or maybe a playbook would be a better word for it.
Yeah, the idea of the company name, Bain Public, which in French stands for public bath, came from this concept of, you know, back in the old days, people used to go to public baths and you know, apply hygiene, right? Just take a shower and clean themselves. And I always found that road mapping is really about cleaning the product from all these ideas that are accumulated over a period of time and just kind of like applying a layer of hygiene. So this way, collectively as a company, you can start anew and just make sure that things are reset in terms of market, competitor, customer changes, right? And it just so happens that a 90-day period, which is 3 months, is just enough time for the market and industry to change, for customers to change, for the competition to come in and into your market. It's always time for a product manager to, at that point, you know, hit the reset button and just, you know, take all this galaxy of ideas that have been, you know, accumulating over a period of 3 months, and then just ask the questions of which ones of these do we want to move forward with and which ones do we not want to move forward with. So it's not about creating a process or inventing or putting product management into a package, but I oftentimes find that product managers work in organizations where these product decisions need to happen on a daily basis, right? You have these different methods and methodologies that are being taught in various YouTube videos or articles that, you know, just talk about, you know, day to day, somebody tells you to have a great idea on the product, a new feature needs to be done. And, you need to basically prioritize it on the spot or maybe in that week. But, you know, there's nothing really where, you know, we ask, what do we expect from a product management team over a period of 3 months, right? Like, what does the leadership team should expect to get on week number one, week number two, week number three in a 3 months time span from a product manager? At which point do we need to do strategy? At which point do we need to prioritize? And at which point do we need to execute, right? Or even outbound communicate a roadmap. So this SOAP was inspired by, you know, best in breed, and I would call it a cocktail of, you know, everything that's being done in product management across the world. You know, Netflix had, with Reed Hastings, had this approach of meeting quarterly with the Netflix leadership team to make decisions. Amazon has this concept of working backwards and writing press releases up front. So it's not as if like we invented something. It was just about, if I were to hire a product manager and ask them every 3 months, you need to apply hygiene to the roadmap and just, you know, readjust product direction based on all of these factors that are changing, what should we expect you to do the first month, the second month, and the third month? If that's clear to leadership, then they can empower the product team. If it's unclear to the leadership team, then they're just going to bombard them with all kinds of features that they want on a daily basis. And we're just going to build feature factories, which is, you know, just always going to add value somehow to the product. But, you know, there's going to be like a percentage of features that are just going to be released that add no value, adding weight to the company, to the product, and basically leading to, you know, disappointing results. So we decided to approach it from that perspective, ask ourselves, if we were to define over a period of 12 weeks, which is the 3 months, what are the expectations that a leadership team should expecting from a product manager and a product team in terms of deliverables? If we can turn those into tangible deliverables, eventually we're going to have a roadmap every 3 months that is collectively and collaboratively decided and set.
Interesting. So the challenge that you're trying to solve, which is the leadership, which you say, let's assume that it's not a product-led leadership or they don't have any product culture, they don't have the product mindset. They would be expecting basically a feature roadmap, feature X by date Y. That's what they're used to and that's what the logical expectation is. But you're saying is we will switch that around and we're going to make them expect basically steps of the process. This is what we're going to do with the process. And by week 7, you should expect this outcome.
Exactly. I always like talking about Apple. And I always give this example is when Steve Jobs decides back in the day, when Steve Jobs decided to show the world that the iPhone is coming. The day he basically makes the announcement for the iPhone, he also announces the new version of Safari. He also announces a new version of the iOS. He also announces a new version of the macOS and a new laptop and so on and so forth. The next day you show up in the Apple store and everything has changed. You don't get to see the old version of the iPhone. You don't get to see the old version of the laptops. You call Apple customer support and they're all trained on how to support the new devices, the new features, and the new hardware that's coming out. The marketing effort is all geared towards the new features. So a company like Apple on a quarterly basis will make big announcements and will make big releases. So why wouldn't a startup and a scale-up approach it from the same angle? There is going to be product release every 3 months. And the marketing, sales, and support teams, at a minimum, need to be able to support that launch. In order for them to support that launch, they need a 3 months heads up to say, hey, by the way, we made a decision that these features are going to be released. Make sure that that gets outbound communicated and enabled with the market. So this concept of agile delivering in a cyclical fashion, that might work for SaaS companies, but it doesn't work for hardware companies. It doesn't work for companies that have serious softwares. And on the other hand, we got to realize that with the customers, they just can't adapt to change, on a weekly basis, right? Like you might be releasing features and sending emails regularly to customers to letting them know that we just added some new buzz feature into the software. But, you know, there's just like this level of information that you can support, right? So 3 months seems to be an interesting time frame where if a company were to say, we are releasing this and the entire organization is going to support the release of these particular features, then as a company, you are going to have success if you're capable of doing this quarter after quarter after quarter after quarter, because basically you're just building momentum. You're building trust every single quarter, let it be with the customer, let it be internally with your sales team, let it be with the marketing team, let it be with shareholders and investors. But that momentum is just going to carry the product forward and allow the company to regularly release things that are supported by the rest of the organization. So I feel product management isn't about product managers managing roadmaps with engineers. It's really about making sure that all of this momentum is being generated cross-departmentally. And how does a product manager make sure that they get that kind of empowerment? It's just by making sure that marketing and sales and support are aware and are part of the decision-making process for the roadmap, which, you know, given the fact that these people are all busy and all these departments have other things to do, they just don't want to revisit every day. They simply want to revisit it once every 3 months. So this way they can go about doing their business during that 3 months to plan for that release, right? Apple's a great example of it, but the other companies are doing it very similarly, right? There's so many companies release things on a quarterly basis. Wall Street works on a quarterly basis. So why wouldn't, you know, any roadmap where, you know, at least take a hygienic bath on a regular quarterly basis. And that's the foundations of being public.
I want to go into the methodology in more detail. But before I do, I also want to ask, for a startup, though, 3 months is a very long time. Like you said, for SaaS companies, maybe weekly production, weekly deployment of new features or web-based technologies, let's say, it's more doable. But 3 months, a quarter is quite a long time for like a 10, 15 person company. So does this method also apply for smaller companies, or is there a different version of it?
Yeah, it's funny because we've been working, Bank Public has been around for 4 years. We've worked with about 50 companies so far, and I would say that a large majority of those were startups. And originally, the founders of the startups think that 3 months is just a lot of time. But the reality is that to enable a product, which means marketing, sales, support, you know, you still need a lot of time to get it done, no matter how small you are or how big you are. Training a sales team to be able to articulate the value of the new features to B2B customers, for example, or training a support team to be able to support the upcoming features, you know, doing it every month versus doing it once every 3 months. It's more efficient for a startup to do it once every 3 months because they just can't spend all their time in training, right? They can't spend all their time releasing product features, communicating about product features. So eventually what engineers need is quiet time. When engineers have quiet time, they're basically very productive. And the best way to give engineers quiet time is to give them 3 months and say, these are the features we're going to be releasing. We're not going to be releasing them every month. We're going to release all three of them at the end of the 3 months. Either way, the marketing support and sales team are going to work towards enabling to the rest of the customer base these features. They're going to be taking their learning, they're creating their collateral, creating their campaigns. All of that's going to happen in a period of 3 months. What I've noticed usually is if I were to explain it this way to a startup, their marketing, sales teams, and support teams are all going to nod and say, yes, it is true that we need 3 months in order to prepare. So that gives the engineering team a lot of time. And that's actually privilege. That privilege will really allow that engineering team to thrive because they know they're not going to be disturbed for the 3 months. So long as a roadmap and its feature set has been clearly articulated at the beginning of the 3 months, then nobody should be bothering them outside of, you know, major critical bugs. And, you know, you have the sales support and marketing team, you know, busy at making sure that that third month's release is going to be a success. So in theory, you don't get bombarded with feature requests or anything like that at that point. You know, you're just trying to steer the company in the right direction. Companies who have tried to do it in shorter time frame, like a month and a half, actually found the process to be energizing, but extremely stressful because a month and a half for engineers to launch something is not a big deal. They can launch something in a month and a half. But for the rest of the organization to align themselves and enable that release actually ends up being quite a big undertaking. Explain that way, most founders prefer doing it every 3 months.
Let's dive in. So this 12-week or 12-step program, how do we divvy it up?
Yeah, so SOAP, we like referencing it as bubbles. So the SOAP process has these bubbles. Every week, we're trying to move the product roadmap forward. So the first 4 weeks are really about questioning what has changed in the market, what has changed in the industry, the competitors, the customers, in order to ask ourselves the questions of, do we pivot or do we persevere from the original strategy we had for this product? So the first 4 weeks are really about doing an in-depth analysis, which we call creating a data room. The industry changes, newsletter articles that talk about things that have changed, competitive analysis, just to see what features the competitors have basically been enabling and have been having success. Data on our customers, let it be hard data from analytics platforms or soft data through various surveys that we can conduct. Also having discussions with our engineering teams about, you know, how the software is doing, some of the big problems that we have internally in terms of technical debt, having discussions with our sales team in order to understand what the prospects are saying out there about things that are missing about our product, as well as our support team, things that annoy our customers. So those, the first 4 weeks are really about, you know, analyzing that data and then having a conversation with the CEO as well as the leadership team saying, okay, you baselined this strategy for us, maybe at the beginning of the year or at some point in time. You know, we're supposed to be going global. We're supposed to, you know, work towards creating network effects, et cetera, right? Like every company has a strategy. Now, within the new information that I got during based on the research in the data room, you know, which one of our strategies do we persevere with and which one of our strategies do we pivot from? You know, the only way to know if you're actually moving forward and generating momentum with a strategy is to look at the numbers. What are the KPIs that are related to that strategy? If the KPIs aren't pointing in the right direction, then it's maybe time for the leadership team to make a pivot. And if things are pointing in the right direction, then it's a perseverance, right? So once you get that information from the leadership team, then you can start moving towards, okay, well, I have a galaxy of bunch of features that have come from various departments and customers and users. How can I basically identify the ones that are going to be, you know, need to be built in the next 6 weeks, 6 months, 6 years? I call this 666 exercise, the exercise that you would do usually towards week number 4, 5, 6, where you look at the, you know, a parking lot of ideas that you've had collected over that period of time through your analysis and identify the ones that, you know, based on your understanding of the strategy are higher priority than other ideas that are maybe further down in time. And bringing the executive team or the leadership team in front of the, you know, the short-term priorities, the six-week priorities, and asking them, look, this is my 666. Do you guys align with this? If these are the priorities that we need to be focusing on in the next quarter, well, there's too many of them. So how do I choose which one I'm going to do and which ones I'm not going to do? Well, let's not get into the temptation of just allowing the CEO to make that decision or being influenced by a sales team or et cetera. So the product manager has to, at that point, ask from the leadership team the green light or the okay to basically do a further digging into each one of those initiatives. So try to bring the company face to face with the problems that are really behind that those initiatives that were highlighted in the 6 weeks. So basically, once the executive or product leadership team has given the green light for that, you know, what I like to call is the business case creation. That business case is created by the product manager in week 7, 8, 9, reviewed with the engineers at week number 9 through a scope definition, where scope for each initiative is then divided into must-haves, nice-to-haves, and wish-list items. A t-shirt size estimate is given. Then week number 10, product manager goes back to the leadership team and presents each one of the business cases, gives them the t-shirt size estimate that was given by the engineering team, and then goes inside a decision-making process to prioritize 2, 3, or 4 of those initiatives and discard the other 6 or 7. What's important here is that once that decision's been made, that the rest of the organization, sales, marketing, support, et cetera, is made aware because they're part of the process, the decision-making process. But it's about making sure that they're aware of what was selected and what was discarded and be honest enough to say, for the next 3 months, we're not going to touch anything that was discarded. We're only going to be working on the things that were selected. Once that selection is made during week number 11 and 12, the product manager is now working alongside each of these departments, communicating inbounds to the rest of the organization, the decisions that were made, working with marketing on understanding what needs to be done in the next 3 months in order to launch these features, working with sales, trying to explain to them what's about to come, and working with the rest of the organization, like the engineering team, breaking down those initiatives into roadmap items that need to be delivered in the next 3 months. So it's a lot of details, but basically high level. The first 4 weeks are really about the data room and the strategy and the pivot versus persevere decisions. Week number 5, 6, 7 are really about getting a green light on short-term priorities and making business cases, reviewing scope. And week number 10 is prioritization. 11, 12 is about communication internally.
And at the end of those 12 weeks, the team starts implementing on the roadmap, right?
The engineering team starts implementing the roadmap. The marketing support and sales team start creating the collateral they need to support the launch, the upcoming launch in the next 3 months. Whereas the product manager team just goes back into week number 1 and starts re-questioning the industry, the market, the users, the competitors, and does the same exercise again. And this is why we call it being public. It's really about hygiene. You have to do this every 3 months. So as the engineering, marketing, sales, and support team get busy with the future, the product management is ready to, you know, carve out and redefine the next evolution for the next quarter.
So as I see it, the first, let's say, 9 weeks is trying to make things more and more clear. And we start with a basically huge pile of post-its, let's say, of items that we can focus on, that we might focus on. And then we slowly basically increase the clarity on what we're going to select from all those. And the week 7, 8, 9, as you said, is preparing those business cases. So I want to dive into those business cases. What detail, at what fidelity should we have those business cases?
So the business case's most important element is the problem. You need to identify where the problem is and put numbers against it. So it's really about understanding where does it hurt the company the most? Where does it make the company feel ashamed the most? And come and put the leadership team face to face with some of these problems is the most important element of the business case. So a third of the time of the product manager is spent on identifying those problems. So it could be, you know, going and grabbing data from the analytics platforms to identify, you know, that there's churn happening or that there is a customer engagement's not happening at the numbers that we want it to be. So if you're able to identify numbers that way, that's great. The other way you can identify the numbers is really by having customer discussions and surveys to validate that there is really dissatisfaction, poor NPS scores and customer satisfactions being bad, a large amount of bugs. But then we can also go into the sales team if you're a B2B company, identifying how long is a customer acquisition cycle time? What is the customer acquisition cost? And is that the real bottleneck? So ultimately, it's about identifying the problems, the bottlenecks that are really causing the product to thrive. And then it's about defining what would be the objective. The objective would always be solving the problem. What would be the key results that we're expecting out of it? That would be moving the metrics that are currently problematic into positive metrics, right? And what would be the impact of moving those metrics? Then the impact would always be a future that basically has a lot of value for the organization, for the customer. You know, the impact isn't always about the customer, right? We often think about product management as it being very customer focused. You know, oftentimes the features that we create add a lot of value to the customers, but it also adds additional revenue for the organization, or it can basically increase trust with the users, or it could create a competitive advantage. So it's always about identifying what the resolution of the problem could have as a positive impact to the organization. And then the hardest part is really defining the scope. Well, okay, so if you're going to solve this problem, then what would be the must-have scope? And this is where concepts of lean startup come in. You know, what is the minimum viable product that you would do, right? So in this case, it would be, what is the minimum viable feature set to get this off the ground and solve the problem? And then if you had extra time, what would be the nice-to-have features to add to it in order to make it even better? And if you even had more time, what would be the wish list features that would really make it into the best feature ever. Once we've defined those three scope and columns, I would say, like column A is the must-haves and nice-to-haves and the must-haves, the commitment for the 3 months period would be just to complete the must-haves. And if you can complete the must-haves, if the engineering team has time, they can go into the nice-to-haves and get those done. But realistically, the expectation is set only to complete the must-haves. That's really the depth of these business cases. It's really about associating it to a problem. And oftentimes, we write business cases in terms of, you know, this would be great for the company, et cetera. But, you know, if you want to sell a roadmap to an executive team, you need to put the company's worst problems in front of them, right? That's the best way to sell some of these features. So it's not about this feature is great because it has great potential. It's really about we suck at something and we need to make this better, right? And oftentimes by trying to make a problem better, we could make the product better. And that ultimately is going to add the value the customer sees in the product that's going to make the product into the product it ought to be, right? So product management isn't about you coming up with great ideas, but it's product management is about solving a bunch of problems the current customer has or the business has through a variety of scope items that could be enumerated and defined in a business case.
By the end of the week 12 or by the end, the time that we start actually building things, we still have a rough idea of, I mean, we do have the must-haves. We have scoped it out. We have identified the problems that we're going to focus on. But there's still a buffer for change, right?
Yeah, so there's this concept of letting the company in on this new approach, which is the approach that most humans don't prefer, which is instead of saying we're going to deliver something in 3 months and we're going to fix the scope, we're going to do the opposite. We're going to fix the time to 3 months. We're going to fix our engineering team to what we have. And we're going to give ourselves a lot of scope variability. But ultimately, the product manager defines the must-haves, the nice-to-haves, and the wish list items, and commits the engineering team on delivering the must-haves in a period of 3 months. But product management is a tricky profession where we don't have control over the engineers falling sick, the engineers quitting, and all of the turmoil that can happen inside an engineering team. So the actual throughput of that team is not under your control. So the only thing you could do is basically adapt yourself in that period of 3 months to whatever can happen. So if an engineer were to fall sick and you realize that we're not going to be able to deliver everything in the must-haves, then the product manager needs to, you know, connect with the engineering team and ask the question, the problems of this business case are the following ones. And the objective is to resolve the problems. And we're going to resolve those problems through a combination of features that we're going to be releasing. But if we don't have the resources to release all these features, then what other features can we release in order to solve the problem correctly? So there's a lot of negotiation being done between the product manager and the engineering team where maybe a must-have item can be dropped midway through the 3 months time frame and replaced by a bunch of nice-to-haves. Or the engineering team can suggest a constructive approach to solving some of those problems that weren't really thought through the first time around, right? So product management is not really committing to the executive and leadership team to delivering a bunch of features. They're simply committing to delivering a solution to a bunch of problems. So whatever combo of features get released at the end of 3 months is a solution to a problem. So the engineering team and product team are working collaboratively during the 3 months time frame, just negotiating on the scope, identifying elements that will really help solve the problems and identifying the ones that won't help solve the problem. And that really empowers the engineers to be able to come to the table with constructive solutions. And it also allows the product manager not to define the how, which is what people hate, right? And simply to be negotiating on the what. Okay, well, what can solve this problem? I identified the problem and I sold the problem to the leadership team and I told them that I'm going to find a solution. Now, the engineering team has one less engineer. How do we figure this out? Let's solve the problem together. And there's nothing more energizing for an engineering team to be able to solve problems together. So nothing is prescriptive. Nothing is at the end of the 9 months or of the 12 weeks defined as being this is the final scope. and we have 3 months to execute it. It's more like, here's the problems that we're going to solve. Let's communicate that back to the clients through marketing, sales, and customer support preparation that we need to do. Let the engineers figure out how to solve the problem. And, you know, midway through the quarter, we will write some how-to documentation. We'll create a video. We'll give it to the support team. We'll train inbounds our support team and our sales team. And then by week number 12, all the solution to those problems are going to be released. If anybody's going to be disappointed in the company, it's going to be the company disappointed as the product and engineering team because they didn't solve a problem. But you cannot have the sales, marketing, or support team or the CEO disappointed because we didn't release a feature. The choice of releasing that feature was really left up to the engineering and product team based on how did it contribute in solving the problem.
So I think that's a good place to go back to what one of the things that you said at the beginning of the conversation is. One of the first things that you said was, this isn't actually about training PMs, but it's actually about training the leadership. You got to make a mindset change in the leadership. And that's what you just talked about, you know, the features not being the things that you actually produce, but you're creating a solution. You're committing to a problem rather than a feature. The features might change, but we are going to solve that problem by way A or way B, way C. That might change. So how do you make that change in the leadership's mind? Because I think that's the one thing that has the most impact, because that's what people are used to. They're used to having a roadmap with a certain set of features with a certain projected date. You're promising, and what you're trying to change in terms of their mindset is that no, that's the roadmap should include problems or areas of growth rather than features. So how do you make that change in the leadership?
It's a pretty tough change. And, you know, most of the people we work with have really hit a wall already. They've tried a few ways and it's failed. So they're coming to us to help them solve it. But ultimately, like, it comes down to identifying what product management is in an organization. The best definition I've ever heard about what a product manager does is that they're the glue that combines all the other departments together. And a product manager, to be a glue, needs to have contact with each one of the departments. So the first things we do when we start this whole process is we bring in the leadership of an entire organization. Oftentimes, they don't know what the leadership team is. What is a product leadership team? Is that the same thing as the C-suite, the executives of an organization? It could be, but it could also include other functions of a company that don't have representations in the C-suite. So for example, I'll need the CEO, I'll need the CFO, I'll need the CTO, I'll need the CMO, I'll need the CRO, and I might need the person who's overseeing support, right? But oftentimes, the C-suite might be represented by two or three people who are wearing multiple hats, right? So it's important for me to first ask to the company, who are going to be the leaders that the product team is going to engage with and interact with for these decisions? Because we need a representation from each of these departments. The most important ones being, you know, sales, marketing, support, the CEO himself, and the CFO, because CFO is basically bottom line about numbers, right? And then you have all these extra departments, HR, et cetera. But, you know, these five that I enumerated are the most important ones. So we established that leadership team, and then we asked them to spend the first 3 weeks of the SOAP process working alongside the product manager on defining and baselining the high-level strategy for the company. Because ultimately, what we expect as a product team from leadership is for them to at least tell us which direction the company needs to go, right? So those first 3 weeks are really about extracting from them all the information that's inside their head into a document that's going to be properly used by product management. So this way we can re-question the leadership team on a regular basis on, has the strategy changed, right? So that baselining of the strategy is done collectively, which allows every department of the company to align on the objectives of the organization as a whole. And it's oftentimes the best time because we realize if marketing and sales are aligned, if engineering and sales are aligned, that's where you can start seeing where departmental silos exist, right? And then we have this concept of pre-wiring. Pre-wiring is when the product manager starts doing what they need to do during that 12-week period. But every time that they come up with a particular conclusion or a particular finding, then their job is to escalate it up to some of these leaders who represent various departments and try to get sympathy from them or their point of view on, or their take on the particular situation. So let's say I identified some of the problems for the company. I can go to the CFO and ask them, are you aligned with these problems? Are you aware of these problems? Do you have additional data about these problems that we don't have about? So pre-wiring is about the product manager having these informal meetings with various leadership stakeholders asynchronously. And the key term here is asynchronously. If you get inside a formal meeting with leadership, that is CFO, CMO, CRO, CEO, then there's going to be some kind of bias where everyone's going to agree with what the CEO says or the person who has the most influence in the room. So it's important for the product manager to, during the 12-week process, to gather data asynchronously, having one-on-one meetings with each one of these stakeholders, 5 to 10 minute meetings, just to make sure that there is sympathy towards what is being communicated, as well as additional information that is now being given to them. So ultimately, when you get into a meeting where you're trying to prioritize and you have all these stakeholders together in the room, nothing really, you know, is supposed to be a surprise to them. They probably have had multiple discussions separately with the product manager. So they're able to collectively make a decision, right? But ultimately, the product manager having these discussions separately has also allowed for the product manager to identify what we like to call grenades. Who is that person? Which department is the department who's against this particular feature? And even if you've identified the problem and expressed it to them, let's say marketing is completely against a particular feature, right? And even if you have it, you are able to make the business case to them, asynchronously having a separate one-on-one discussion, you realize that they're about to object to that one for fundamental reasons you don't understand. So getting into a meeting room and having yourself and the entire executive team completely derailed by a team member who doesn't want a particular feature on the roadmap is just a big waste of time. So not only your waste of time as a product manager, but the entire leadership team's time. So this pre-wire concept is really about having the product manager work asynchronously with each one of these departments, making sure that the grenades are not only identified, but also handled. You know, handled as in, you know, you got to find ways of making sure that this person can explain to you why it's important to them that this feature doesn't get released, and what do they suggest you do, right? And so that's the softer part of product management, where once you get all of these people in the room again, decision doesn't need to create consensus. Consensus means that everybody agrees 100% and wants to move forward. We don't ask for consensus. You can never get consensus as a company anyways. Every department has different objectives. So no one's going to basically agree 100%. But what we're asking them is for consent. Consent means I might disagree on this, but I think it's the right thing for the company to do. We ask from all the executives and the leadership team to give consent for the product team to move forward on the resolution of a problem for the next 3 months. So disagreements are acceptable, but everybody needs to at least say, yes, go ahead. And once they've said, yes, go ahead, then their department is now responsible of supporting the release of that particular feature, which means if it's a sales team and the sales team is against that particular feature, if they've given their consent, then the sales team needs to basically carry forward the work of outbound communicating those features to the clients and sell them. And if they're against it and the engineering team releases it and they don't sell it, then that's a waste of time for the company. And that comes to detriment for the entire organization. So it's these type of discussions we have collectively with the leadership team, which gets them to align. It's not always easy. I have to say, the first time we do SOAP, you know, we're always surprised with grenades. We're always surprised with all kinds of behavior that oftentimes look very childish. But, you know, we're dealing with humans. What's most important is that we do it once with them in order to empower the product manager to do it again and again and again. And there's nothing better than seeing a company who has adopted at least portions of this, the SOAP approach, do it 3, 4, 5 times and generate so enough momentum for them to start trusting in the process, trusting one another and trusting in this collaborative decision-making, which ultimately is going to create a culture that leads to product-led culture, right? You know, we're humans at the end of the day, and it's all about interpersonal relationship. And I think, the best way to basically make this work is spending a lot of times with humans. Product managers need to do that. The only difference again here is that it needs to be done asynchronously and never together.
I would assume, or I would guess, that maybe the first weeks would be the most difficult of this process, because I think it requires the clarification, the strategy from, or the buy-in from all the parties, especially the executive suite or the product leadership, let's say. Because strategy is this soft word that doesn't really have a clear guideline on how to determine how to write it. But it also, if it's you know, clear and sound, the rest of the weeks, I think, should be pretty much, I mean, aligned or going towards the right direction. So how do you get that clear strategy out of a leadership team?
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because it's the actual opposite. The strategy part is the funnest part. Everybody loves contributing to strategy discussions because it's where you talk about the future, where you talk about choice, where you talk about, you know, any idea is a good idea, right? So the first 3 weeks actually ends up being the funnest part because everybody's pitching in, everybody's collaborating, and nobody really has anything to lose other than their idea not moving forward, right? It's week number 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 that become really hard because that's where you start having to say no to various departments and their ideas that exist on a sticky, and you're basically letting them know that that particular sticky note is no longer valid for the short term, but potentially midterm idea. Now that's harder to accept because you're no longer dealing with ideas. You're basically, you know, dealing with egos and
close to reality.
Yeah, it comes closer to reality. They're like, well, no, we need to this feature because I'm going to close this client. And if I don't close this client, we're going to lose $1 million in revenue. And that's not acceptable for the company because it has an impact on the sales team and their bonus. That's a harder decision to have. So actually, I find the first 3 weeks are the ones where I get the most reputational capital in some ways with the leadership team. That's where all the departments are working in unison. And you as a product manager, you're using that input to basically, you know, earn a lot of reputation points that you put in the bank. Because starting week number 4, the engineer might come in to you and say, look, this technical debt issue is a ticking time bomb and we need to address it in the short term. And you've discarded and you put in the midterm. Why did you do that? And this is where as a product manager, you can come back and say, look, we had this discussion. You were part of these collective brainstorms about the strategy or the organization. I made sure that you had a say in this entire process. At this point, what I ask from you is to simply take 5 minutes with me, explain to me why this technical debt is important. And, you know, if there's anything I can do to change your mind and move it to the market. And those credits that you earned originally, they'll come and help you down the line in managing people's expectations. So ultimately, you're never saying no. You're just saying no, not now. But that no, not now conversation is always one that's a difficult one. But the strategic discussions you've had earlier on at least gives you the credibility to be able to say no.
How do you convey the idea of this MVP? Because I think that's also new for, let's say, non-product team or non-technology teams. Mm-hmm. I think the definition of MVP, I think it can mean different things to different teams.
It's a dangerous word.
Yeah, I mean, the basic understanding of MVP is, okay, we'll do less features. That would be the, you know, okay, we won't do this, we won't do this, we won't do this, but it needs some sort of a homogeneity in terms of value. I found that it's more difficult to explain to non-experienced product people.
Yeah, well, I mean, the funny thing is that I always look at Mozart as a great example. Mozart's a one-person genius. And he was able to create amazing music in very short amounts of time. But you could take 20 average musicians and they wouldn't be collectively capable of doing in 1 year what Mozart can do in 1 day. And that's the case with engineering teams. You don't know what that engineering team is capable of doing in 3 months. They could be a bunch of Mozarts in there, or they could be a bunch of average musicians. Right. But it's all really comes down to how motivated they are, how they support one another, how they communicate with one another, and how they solve problems together. Ultimately, when you're defining this minimum viable product, and in this case, you're looking at one of the short term initiatives in the roadmap and you're saying this is the must have scope. You know, again, it's a very liquid proposition. You're saying this scope is not the must haves. This is a negotiation starting point, and we're basically going to elaborate on it as the quarter moves along. And based on whether we have Mozarts or 20 average musicians, we should be able to come up with something extraordinary. So I don't really like talking about the scope, nor do I show the scope to the leadership. I find that the SOAP process actually asks the engineers to give a t-shirt estimates on the scope and to discuss it together before the proposal goes to the executive team. And this is part of this empowering element that, you know, that no decision is made until the engineering team has had a say, right? So they had a say. So they feel that ultimately out of the six initiatives that when we only have to choose two or three priorities, they had a say on all six. And finally, the executive team chose two. That already motivates them because nobody told them what to do. They were the one who told the executive what can be done, right? And after that, the product manager coming back and saying, these are the two initiatives that we selected for the next 3 months with the leadership team. Now we need to execute on it. Let's work together and figure out how much of these must-haves can we knock off and what are the other nice-to-haves that we could do if time permits. Then it's a constructive approach to solving problems. And an engineer ultimately wants to solve problems. That's why they become engineers. Solving problems collectively is a drug too that makes them want to do more. There's nothing more demotivating than an engineer than to being told what to do, how to do it, and to whiplash him regularly, asking him to change priority. By removing that, you're giving him a favor. You're saying, look, I'm only asking you to solve the must-have problems, but I believe in you, and I know you can do this. And I know that by the end of 3 months, we're going to be able to deliver more.
I think the main...
And usually we do.
The main theme that I get from reading about your material and what you're saying right now is communication is probably the most core pillar of this entire thing all through the process. The frequency of it, the reach of the communication network, things that you talk about, I think they determine the quality of the outcome at the end of those 12 weeks.
Yeah. And a wise man once said, show me a problem and I can identify a communication breakdown somewhere in there. And we're all human. Software development is about human interactions. And I think that in some ways, the companies that thrive are the ones that know how to communicate well, are the ones that have people who have the empathy to work together and are willing to solve problems together. And a product manager ultimately is just the person who glues these people together and tries to increase the level of communication, preventing those breakdowns from happening. And so in some ways, product managers are just shrinks, you know, and unofficial team shrinks. We're like team coaches. We're just trying to make every player, let it be the sales team, the marketing team, the CEO, and all these leadership members play together. And we're doing that using the strategy that they come up with, questioning it regularly, and just motivating them to go out there and deliver on it. So if a product manager doesn't have the ability to listen to other team members, doesn't have the ability to frame problems in a way that allows them to see the value of the solution, then, you know, you're not doing product management. That's actually, you know, the reason why we basically decided to do what we do. It's like we feel that product managers out there who oftentimes fit inside company cultures that don't have this communication element fail. And they will fail mainly because they ask themselves the question, is my job to pump out features or is my job to work on the communication in between departments and be that glue in between them? And the reality is that as a product manager, you need to walk inside a company, look at the culture and say, can I change this culture? And if you're lucky that the culture exists, even better for you. But if you're unlucky, then the choice you have is I either change it or I get the hell out of here. And, you know, I think that the more organizations are ready to accept the fact that product managers are out there to change cultures, to make it into teamwork, make it into a collaborative, consent-driven culture, the better you are. But if you evaluate a product manager just based on the number of features they're pumping out, then you have pretty poor culture in your company.
How can people learn more about the SOAP methodology and what Bain Public does?
Yeah, we're very transparent. So we have about 60 articles on our blog, on our website. Just go and click on the article link. We have eBooks. You can basically just sign up and we'll send it to you. We have a newsletter. We have a social media platform that's constantly talking about product management and a lot of collateral that we just give away. And we give a lot of workshops away as well. And we're part of many podcasts. So if you just, you know, want to self-serve. Everything's out there on the Bain Public website that allows you to learn and apply some of these processes. And if you want us to come in and help you change the culture of your organization, we're more than happy to do so as well.
Perfect. Thank you so much for taking the time, Paul. It was great learning about Bain Public and the SOAP methodology. Thanks for taking the time.
No, thank you very much. It's always fun to talk among product managers, and I definitely hope that this has an impact everywhere in the world.
Absolutely. And thank you to everyone who's listening, and see you at the next episode.